This message was given at Grace Community Church in Minden, Nevada. At the end, we will give information about how to contact us to receive a copy of this or other messages.
I've never had such an exuberant welcome in any congregation like this before. And I must confess, from the first day that I came to you, the people of God here, and the first time we came to you, you have left a mark upon our minds, hearts, and memories that we will never forget. Your warmth, your love, your biblicism, and your fellowship with each other. And of course, the patience I needed to be with our friend. But you know, one of the wonderful things God do is to give us brethren who are pilgrims and we are making our way to heaven. So the day will come when we will sing, "Worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and wisdom and honor and glory and strength and blessing." What a chorus on that grand and wonderful day. But I didn't come to preach tonight. I want to tell you four things about myself. By the way, when do we start? When will we finish? 10 o'clock? Okay, I won't keep you too long. I want to say four things. One, give you a little summary of my birth and religion. Two, my Bible and conversion. Three, falling in love. And fourthly, my present situation. Let us take them one by one. My birth and religion. Those of you who read history, you know that Vasco da Gama and Christopher Columbus were commissioned in many ways, some by the papacy, to discover lands. And in 1492, 1493, Christopher Columbus then traveled and discovered the West Indian Islands. They were called islands, East India Islands, because they were making their way to India for spices and so on. And each island in the West Indies has a name, and that name is particular. For instance, Dominica. Christopher Columbus discovered it on a Sunday. And all he could remember is the priest when he's at the altar, and then he turns to the people and he says to the people, "Dominus vobiscum." And he goes this way, that way. That is, "The Lord be with you." So that's what the island is called. So each island has a history. Now, my family, as in the West Indies, you remember the war we had, so some of the islands were British. So then we were born as British citizens, or Commonwealth citizens, as it was called then. In my family, there were eight of us, four boys and four girls. And as we were growing up, one thing Father would not tolerate, he could not tolerate, and we could not violate, was this. We could never, ever fight with our sisters. You touch them, you've had it. Furthermore, I'm not saying Mom and Dad didn't have their little teeth, but I've never seen him with Mom and mom and dad having a jamboree, a quarrel. They just didn't do that, I think, because we didn't hear it. And so, as boys, we had the field. We had a good tumble, a good upbringing. It's a land, it's free, water and everything. We were extremely happy until just after midnight on Christmas Eve in 1953-52, my house was filled with people, and I got a little annoyed. I knew Christmas was coming, but why so many people? Why can't they stay in their own home until it's daylight? Why are they coming in here? But they were sad, and I couldn't understand it. But I saw some people hovering around the major bedroom, the big bedroom, where you had a Victorian four-poster, and you needed a pair of ladders to get up there. So that was Mom and Dad's bedroom. And what had happened, Mom had given birth, there was an infection. By the time they called the ambulance, of course, it's not like the kind of ambulance service you have over here. By the time the ambulance came, Mom suddenly died. And for a while as a boy, what is death? I've never seen death, never known death. And I'll never forget. She had to be buried the same day. And then they took us from different families, washed us and dressed us. And then we had to have the respect, the march past. And there, Mom was in a coffin. And I said, well, why did they put her in this box? And I went to kiss her. As I kissed her on the forehead, she was so cold. And then, it really dawned on me then, Mother was dead. So God was merciful to us. We had extended families. They looked after us. And so on. But that's a different story. Now let me move on to my religion. Back in the West Indies then, probably as now, most of the islands were Roman Catholic islands. And as I mentioned, with Christopher Columbus and so on. So here we are. In Dominica, Roman Catholics, and we, as children grew, we had to go to confession and First Holy Communion and so on and so forth. But I'll never forget, as a boy, we went to, boys would have their confession 1 month, girls another month, and so on and so forth. Whilst all the boys gathered, and then you had the confession box, and you would say, Bénissez-moi mon père pour parce que j'ai péché. That is, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. Why do you want a blessing when you have sinned? Don't ask me, but that's what we were told. And so the boys then were having a giggle among themselves. And it was a French priest, Father Prusman. He left the confessional box, and he came in, and he just pushed the boy. And I said, what? Because we regarded them as holy Joes. And holy Joe pushing a boy? And you know, he went down in my estimation. From that day, I never, ever went to confession. But I had a problem. We had Holy Communion, and your parents are there. So I would go, on the beach, there was a cave, confession, I would sit there throwing pebbles in the sea. And I said, no, until that priest admits to me he was wrong, I ain't going to tell him my sins. He got to tell me his sins first. So there was a period of resentment in me. It was just. You know, as a boy, it was just. He didn't. So I didn't listen to him. Then in 1962, I moved to London, and there I was, and my sister then gave birth to her first daughter. So then I was chosen to be godfather. Now, godfather in my culture, when you become godfather, is a legal thing. If anything happens to her, I am responsible, legally. So I didn't mind that. Everybody did that. People did that for me, so I went. It was, the name of the church was the Guardian Angel, there in East London. So we went, and that afternoon, and the priest came. He just rattled through the thing. I was shocked. And I said to myself, he doesn't mean it. There is no meaning in what he was saying. But in about those years, 62, 63, many of us were young. We were in England. We didn't know anywhere. And you know what a christening was? A christening was a time to have a good jump up. And we would meet, there would be lots of food, lots of music, and we would dance and sing and have a good jump up. But when we got home, what the priest did troubled me. And so I was meditating, I was thinking, I was contemplating. And I'll tell you a little bit of that later. So, in the midst of all that was taking place, I didn't know anything about God. Nothing at all. Until one day, when we were as boys, one Sunday afternoon, we were having Sunday school. And guess, boys and girls, what we were having for Sunday school? What do you have for Sunday school? Yes. What do you have at Sunday school? That's right. Your teachers teach you. You know what Sunday school was? We had cowboy's themes on that little reel. That was Sunday school. Cowboy films and cowboy film from the United States we had. And we were thrilled. As boys, we could see all those cowboys dashing there. And then suddenly I went out as head boy. There was a lady coming up the drive. So as head boy, you go out. And I went out to introduce myself. My name is Ashil Blaze. And I said, ma'am, and what is your name? She said, my name is Lam from Canada. I said, oh, what are you doing here? Are you on holiday? She said, no. I am here to tell people about Jesus Christ. I said, Jesus Christ? Who is he? And as she was going to explain to me, the priest came down. And the priest shook her hand. And I back off a little. And then when the priest asked a similar question, when the lady said she was a missionary, the priest literally pushed her. And I was going for the priest, and I back off. He's the Holy Joe. You better don't touch him. But I had no respect for him. It just solidified the respect or the disrespect. If you could treat a woman in this way, we couldn't fight our sisters. We couldn't be disrespectful to our mothers. And here is my leader pushing a visitor, and she's a woman. And that was it for me. So time went on. So I give you this little outline of my upbringing. Let us move on to my Bible and conversion. Going back to that party we had after my sister gave birth, whilst the friends and others were having a good time in one room upstairs, I went upstairs. Because during the week, a musician friend of mine gave me a copy of the Bible, to my astonishment. He said, here is a book. I know you like reading. You people like books. And he gave me a beautiful word. I said, what's this? He said, this is a Bible. I said, a Bible? Where did you get it? He said, well, Mom gave it to me when I left home. But, you know, in England, people don't read Bibles. So I took it, because I love reading, and I took it home. Took it to my room and put it on the mantelpiece. But that Sunday, when the priest did what he did, I went up. I was in my room after I had a little jump up, probably I had enough. And I sat there, and I was reflecting, and I saw the Bible. And I said, oh, I wonder, what has the Bible got to say about the priesthood and Roman Catholicism and myself? And previously, I heard about the Bible. So I picked the Bible up. And I said, well, where do I read? I don't know. So I turned to the table of contents. Remember, it's an authorized version. So I turned to the table of contents and I read these words, the Gospel according to Saint Matthew. I said, wow, he's the first saint in the Bible. He must be a good one. So I turned to the page number. And you try to read, you've never read a Bible before. You try to read the opening verses or lines, if you like, in Matthew's Gospel chapter 1 of all the names. I said, what on earth is talking about? It seemed to be a jigsaw. And in that Elizabethan language. And I said, oh dear. Then I remembered what Roman Catholic Catechism says. It says this. See, mark that, the deceitfulness of the devil. The Pope is infallible, that is to say, he cannot mislead us as the head of the church. He solemnly declares and defines what we must believe and do to be saved. Now I say to myself, I don't consider myself dumb, so an ignorant. I can read a little, but I can't understand this. Well, only the Pope knows what it is saying. As I was about to close the Bible, my eyes caught verse 18. And it goes like this. Now, the birth of Jesus Christ is on this wise. And I said, now, there is a connection. But what the connection was, so I kept on reading, reading, reading. And when I came to Matthew chapter 6 and verse 24, I read these words. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Love and hate. God and mammon. I said, well, what is mammon? Then I concluded, well, there is a God. Mammon must be the devil. And tremendous fear. You mean all my life? I was about in my early 20s, probably 21, 22. I have been serving the devil. And I panicked. I can remember putting the Bible on the table and kneeling down and say, God, I want to serve you. I don't want to serve mammon. I don't want to serve the devil. Because later on we grow to know what mammon meant. But to me, it was God and the devil. And God really helped me to pray. And over the weeks, I discovered my mind was being changed. A change was taking place. And I couldn't understand it. So I went to my priest. At the name of the church was called the guardian angel. And I went to him, made my appointment. I said, look, Father, I can't understand what's happening in my mind. I can't understand what's happening to me. How come reading the Bible can alter one's thinking? He didn't answer. I repeated the question. He didn't answer. I repeated the question. Then he said to me, I don't know. But I'll send you to a priest a mile up the road, and he'll be able to explain it to you. So I said, fine. So he made my appointment. I went to see the priest, and I entered into his study. And he said, Father Prusman said, I said, yes, sir, but my question is very simple. How come reading the Bible can alter one's thinking? How come it can affect you in your heart? Why is that? And then he had a massive statue of the Virgin Mary pouncing over his desk, like so. And he said to me, well, I can only kneel down and worship her Virgin Mother. I said, wait a minute, sir. I was reading in a book in the Bible called Exodus. And there was a set of rules in that Bible. And he said, we mustn't worship idols. His face changed. He became angry with me. And you know what he did? He excommunicated me on the spot. He really kicked me out. And I can remember getting out, turning right, making my way home, and I panicked. For the first time in my life, I was unchurched. And we are told there is no salvation outside the Roman church. So, as far as they were concerned, I had it. But I said, wait a minute, why did it do that? And as I walked home, I was reasoning with myself. I was not disrespectful. I was not discourteous. What is it did I say? It must have been when I said to him, there in the Bible, in that second book, there are a set of rules. That is the Ten Commandments, isn't it? And when I came to that conclusion, you know what happened to me? Before I got home, I was determined, I am going to stick to the Bible. Even if the Pope would come, I would tell him he's wrong. The Bible says so. I was so determined, I'm going to keep to it. And if I die, I'll die believing it. And that was it. And I was determined. So after a little while, coming home, some people were distributing leaflets, so I took one. It was the Emmaus Bible School offering courses on the Bible. So I exhausted all that they had and so on and so forth. And but the principal of that college or of that organization detected whatever he detected. So he wrote me a letter. And he said, I want to come to pay a visit to you, or to visit you. I said, yes. And he came. I'll never forget. He was a middle-aged gentleman. He was dressed in brown from top to toe. And he had a brown briefcase. And we sat up in the shadow of St. Paul's. And he's the one who told me the city of London is only a mile square. And he gave me a little bit of history. And as we sat in the garden of St. Paul's, he picked his Bible up. And he read. And he prayed. And he said to me, do you go to church? I said, I used to, but the priest kicked me out. And there is no other church. He said, what do you mean? I said, there is no other church. So I stay home and I have been reading the Bible. He said, there are other churches. I said, what? He said, yes, there are people who believe the Bible. I said, in England? He said, yes. And he said, leave that with me. I'll get in touch with someone, someone will get in touch with you. And to his word, then a German couple, I had a note from them, I went to see them. I was so excited, I was going to visit a couple of people who believed the Bible, from my home to where the German friends were, a matter of quarter of a mile. But I was so excited. We didn't have showers in those days. You had a good wash to get, you know, and to comb my hair and oil myself. And I took a taxi. I called a taxi. It's only a mile down the road. So I called the taxi. And I said, Devon's Road. He looked at me. I said, yes, sir. Devon's Road, number so and so. So he took me. And when I got to Devon's Road, I paid him. And I said, take an extra for you, sir. And I gave him an extra fee. I paid him double. Oh, he said, thank you, thank you, thank you. And then I knocked. And then I heard that noise coming down. I said, oh, he doesn't expect me. What is that? And he opened the door. Mr. Blaze. I said, yes. Come in, come in. And I went up. We sat down. And we had a little chat. And we spoke a little. And then he said to me, he's going to a church. It's London Tabernacle. In Spurgeon's day, you had the Tabernacle. You had Spurgeon in the West and Spurgeon's friend, R.G. Brown, in the East. He said, that's where I go. I said, yes. That's what is in the Bible. I've been reading of the Tabernacle. It's in the market, but that's a Jewish place. He said, no. It's East London Tabernacle Baptist Church. I said, what is that? He said, that's where I go into worship. I said, you mean the people there believe the Bible? He said, yes. He said, meet me Sunday morning at 10 to 11. And I tell you, brethren, for the first time, you have met three Christians. And for the first time in my life, I'll be going to church with those Christians. So I got dressed and bought that Saturday night was so long. Sunday didn't seem to be coming. Eventually, Sunday turned up. I got dressed and I went. I waited for him. He gave me his time. And he was there on the dot. And we went in. As I went in, I look around. And I said, well, what kind of place is this? It was bare. If you go to a Roman Catholic church, all ornate and gold and stained glass windows and altars and incense and nonsense. So I said, oh. Protestant. And we had Jesuits to be our priests. And not only so, they were historians. And they taught us, as we were what you would call probably today in the upper class, I don't know what you call it here, Protestantism started with Henry VIII. And he painted Henry VIII as a demon who could cut off the head of his queen and who could be such an immoral man. And he said, ooh. I said, well, this is Protestantism, only oak, wherever you turn. It was bare. Absolutely nothing. I said, what have I gotten myself into? Anyway, we went in, I sat down, and suddenly in front of me a door opened. Three men came out. The shorter man had a kind of semicircle. He went up the stage. The other two, one went a kind of half circle and he sat. The other one went all the other way and he sat down. I said, boy, they have order in this place. And then the little man stood up. He said something. And my friend then gave me a book and said, this is the number. And while they were singing, I said, but that's prose. Why are they singing prose? Prose is not there to be sang. That's something you read. But the people were singing it. The first time I saw a hymn book in my life. And then when it was done, the little man behind the desk said, "Let us pray." So we sat down. So we sat down and I saw everybody bow their heads. I said to myself, "Wait a minute. I am not too sure." So I bowed my head and I kept my eyes open. Just in case. Because it's an alien environment for me. I've never been. And it was a large audience. And I wasn't going to close my eyes. Bet your boots I won't. But then, and I saw the man. He was not reading his prayers. He held the side of his lectern and he was praying as though he could touch God. As though God was there. I said, "How can people pray like this?" And then somebody twisted and I put my head down again. And then he preached on Jude 11. On Balaam, the madness of the prophet. I'll never forget the title of his sermon. The madness of the prophet. And reading my Bible for the last 2 years, and I sat, and that man preached for about an hour and 20 minutes. It was like 5 minutes. And I said, "This is what they do in this place?" So Sunday after Sunday, I went, I sat at the front. I didn't want to be disturbed. Lots of families, but just to sit down and to take everything. The pastor, as he opened up the scriptures to us and taught us the word of God there in East London Tabernacle. And there in 1964, I was baptized and became a member. And later on, as I grew in grace and in knowledge, you had the college called LBC, London Bible College. You went there to do some study and a little bit of study connected with the University of London and what have you, and so on. Then, one day my pastor came to me and he said, "I've been sent to have a chat with you." I said, "Oh, what have I done?" He said, "Nothing. We have been thinking as a church, and they have sent me to talk with you to see whether you would consider coming to the church to work full time as a district evangelist." I said, "What is that?" He said, "Well, the reason is you are going through the whole area, witnessing to people and setting up Bible studies here, there, and everywhere." Then I said to him, "Well, I can see that, sir, but I am about to go to Cambridge to take my course and to finish and I'll do my thing." Then he paused. He said, very wisely, not that he wasn't interested in education. He said, "They will attack your faith. And after 4 years, you may return with your MA, but you may not have your faith." I said, "Why is that?" And then he explained to me. And then he sat down. He was not adverse to degrees, don't get me wrong. And when he explained to me, I didn't understand liberalism and all the isms. And I said to him, "Give me time to think, sir, and I will come back to you." And this is where in a congregation you need good pastors. And the more I thought, I decided I'll take his counsel and stay home. So from there, a district evangelist. Then later on, they called me to be assistant minister, a very large church, and God was merciful to me, and so on and so forth. So here I will stop on my second. I must move on to my third. And my third point is falling in love. Ah, for you young girls, that will be exciting. Well, in the church was a very large church. Ooh, probably what? 600-700 people? Very large church. And of course, in large church like this, had lots of girls, lots of young women. But, you know, you were so immersed in my work, and not that I wasn't interested in girls, but when you are so immersed in your in what you were doing, you haven't got much time to look at girls. If I mean, I didn't have much time to look at girls, put it this way. So, but one day, very interestingly, I saw a family. They were sitting probably to the left. And I went to the home to do some little work for them. And there it was, that young lady, that young girl in that family. I said, ah, that's where she belonged. And then, you know, some hurricanes started in my heart. That's the best way to put it. Hurricane started in my heart. But I was arguing with God. No, Lord, she's a bit too young, and I don't know her, and so on. And I was preparing my studies on Hebrews 11 for my class, and we were dealing with Abraham. Abraham went, not knowing where he was going, but was strong in faith. I had no difficulty reading Owen and in the exposition for my class and so on and so forth. And then the application for the men, then we are the sons and daughters of Abraham. And that was my first application, and it hit me. You hypocrite. How can you go and preach to people saying they are the sons and daughters of Abraham and God is calling you and putting this young woman in your heart and you said Abraham didn't know where he was going? Why can't you trust God? And you know, overwhelming conviction came upon me. I was sitting behind my desk. I almost fell back. And I fell on my knees and I cried unto God. I brought all kinds of argument. Lord, I don't know her. She's appeared to be a little younger. And this and that and the other. And I prayed and I wept. But when I got off my knees, there was a calm in my mind and in my heart. So I went to my desk. I took a card and I wrote on it, in what times I'm afraid, I will trust in you. I will trust and not be afraid. I signed it and I posted it to her home. That's all. I mean, you sending something to a girl, that's not the way to that's not the way to announce romance, is it? But I'll tell you how it happened. So that particular year, you know, we had the electricians went on strike, and I was determined I was going to go to the home and to tell her what I have in mind. And of course, there were blackouts, but because I was so determined, I had to speak. So I went and I rang the bell, and then she came out with a candle. Come in, and the house was in darkness. Mommy was there, and the brother and sisters were there, and we made our way to the kitchen. And of course, standing in the doorway, what do I say? What do I say? I haven't got Dad there to tell me what to say. I do not have anybody to tell me what to say. And I stood there, and my heart was beating. Zoom, zoom. Zoom, zoom, zoom. And I can remember saying to her something like, do you think you could be a pastor's wife? And she made a U-turn. She turned her back on me. And she was looking west through the window, east through the window. And I said, you've done it. And then she came back. She turned around. Then she said, I think I can, by the grace of God. She can. And you know, and I can remember running. I ran home. I was happy. She can. She can. She can. That's where we started. But that's how it started. Until later on, then we had to be engaged. We assembled the family together and read Genesis 24 of Isaac's bride coming and so on and so forth. And then give her the engagement ring. I felt so secure, so at home. And God was merciful to us. But then, in the midst of that, in 1972, Trinity Baptist Church at Mountville, New Jersey, called me to be assistant or associate pastor with Pastor Martin. So we had to go. And one of the hardest things, Pastor Martin came over and we were making our way to we are in the airport, and when you come to the place where you have to say goodbye, she came. And I said, oh dear, but I'm leaving her behind. And we were going. And you know, a sense of sadness came over my soul. But yet confidence, God is able to keep her. And then in 1973, I can remember we used to call each other once a week. Then it was cheaper for her the other way on the Sunday morning, 5 hours difference. And I can remember saying to her, it was lonely in the States, because new culture, new language, new accent, new people, new food, new church, everything was new. And here I was, there in Essex Fell, quite a lovely place, but I had a flat and a young man was showing me the ropes and what you do and how you do it. But I said, well, I need my wife, I need a wife. So when she called and we talked over that, then she simply said to me, very simply, I do not need a career, but you need a wife. I said, yes. I said, okay, immediately put the ban. In those days, you had to put a ban, you go out and you put the ban, and that's all published and what have you. And that was it. So then in November 1973, we got married. And then we returned to Trinity Church. And there we were until 75. And in 75, the church sent me back to UK on a church planting ministry that gave birth to Grace Baptist Church, where I served from that day until 2008, when I retired. Let me give you a little bit. When I turned about 60, we as elders met, and I said to the men, gentlemen, we just do not know what a day may bring forth. And I turned 60, and by law, if you want to, you retire at 65. What I do not want is to leave the church without a pastor, a man who is qualified to lead, even though you men are there. So what I'm going to do is to develop a series called Looking for a Pastor. And the men agreed. So we called the congregation, we informed the congregation, and I started the series, Looking for a Pastor, turning into the scriptures, opening up the scriptures. We spent some time in that. When I was done, we took our grandchildren to Kent, the palace where the king of Scotland when he was coming down to be King of Scotland and England. We had our lunch among the fallow deers and the grandchildren. Said to them, run with Grandma, let Granddad take the sun. We don't always see the sun in UK. So when the sun came out, I was lying on my back there in the sun, basking in the sun. It was not as hot as it is here. And then they came back, Granddad time. And I tried to get up. And I couldn't get up. As in Kenny said, time to go there. And I tried to get up. And I couldn't get up. So to cut a long story short, we called our son, they made all the arrangement, and I spent 6 weeks in hospital on my back. It used to take me about 20 minutes to get out of bed with the nurses helping me. And God gave me the best of physicians. And one day they all came. They said, we cannot understand what is happening to this man. So he said, we are going to turn you and put you on your tummy. And one of the professors, big man, his hands were, they were like whale's wings. And he said, I'm going to press. And you tell me where it hurts. And he was kneading me. I thought I was a bit of dough. And he was kneading me. And then he got, I said, that's it, sir. And he said, I'll try again. And that was it. They said, okay, whatever it was. And they gave me the name, because we do not understand what was happening. We will call you our mystery man. That's the title. But I knew. So one day, I was sitting on, as in years, the hospital gave her opportunity to come whenever she wanted to come. As the nurse got me to my chair, as I sat in a very high chair waiting for her, my eyes were looking on the door, at the door looking, because it was always exciting. You know what happened? God took my mind all the way back to 1968. When I really wrestled with God that if he would be pleased to give me 40 years as he gave Moses to serve him. And those 40 years were up. And it was in hospital, in that chair, and when Ezin came, I said, yeah, that's it. 40 years I asked God, and here it is. It is up. And so we had to set everything in rolling. When I got a little better, went back to church, and then we had, as men, called a congregation, we started looking for men. Then we had three lines, a long line, which you had all kinds of men coming to preach, then a shorter line, only men without a pastorate, then a very short line, men who are interested in us. And there were three of them, three shortlisted. And out of the three, God gave us a wonderful young man who is there today, and the church is going on from strength to strength. And in God's mercy, they are going, and God is blessing that ministry. Now, my last point, my present situation. About 6 months ago, somebody invited me to Bristol, to a church there, a Baptist church, to preach. So I just went to preach and I returned. And then later on, they called me. They said they're interested if I could come to be their interim pastor. And then, because they haven't got a pastor, they haven't had a pastor for about 10 years or so. And I said, okay, I'll come and teach you. So I started a series entitled Looking and Praying for a Pastor on the Wednesday. Looking and Praying for a Pastor. But you know, looking for a pastor, that wasn't the thing they had in mind. They didn't think of the scriptures as, well, he has experience, he's an older man, he knows lots of pastors and lots of areas. And then things didn't work well. And then the people didn't like that kind of robust preaching. And then we had pastors and deacons meeting. And there was a bit of a rift among the deacons. So at that meeting, the man who was chairing the meeting, we discussed that, and he went around asking the men. Three men said no. Three said yes. I didn't take any part in it. I wanted to find out, to take the temperature of the men. And then he went around again to ask the men. They stuck to their guns. And then he said to me, well, what do you think, sir? I said, I'll tell you. I'll tell all of you. Jesus Christ says this, a kingdom divided against itself cannot stand. And he tells us, not even Satan's kingdom can stand if he is divided. Therefore, gentlemen, I stand down. It was a shock to them. I said, you are divided. You are not willing to go by the Bible. And if you will not go by the Bible, you will not have Ashiel Blaze. It was as simple as that. And so, God in His mercy, I stood down by when we go back, and by April the 18th, for there, that'll be the end. And then, what I did, the congregation then met, and I mentioned that to the congregation. I told them what had happened, and how I stood down, and a few Sundays ago, at the public meeting, I stood up after preaching my last sermon. People didn't know that, the public, and I said to them, I am no longer pastor here or interim pastor because 50% of the deacons in this church do not believe what the Bible teaches concerning pastors, elders, elders, pastors. And because of this, Jesus says, and I give you the text, therefore I have stood down. And so that is the up-to-date situation with us here. And then we do not know, we didn't resign from the membership. We'll stay as members until such time when God will be pleased to make His way clear. And then we may move. We just don't know. But that's the end. And so the whole thing, as you can see, back home, what you have here, brethren, let me take an opportunity to give you an exhortation. You may take what you have here for granted, where you have elders and deacons, and where you are functioning so well. Sunday when I came, I sat there, and you have our musicians playing. You go to, probably you have it in your country. When you have that at back home, it's so noisy. Your eardrums begin to pop. And the people who are playing are so sloppy. And it's like a carnival. But what do you have here where the musicians stand to play? And we can stand to sing. Modern tunes and hymns and the traditional. Brothers and sisters, do you realize what God has given to you and how you must preserve and protect that? Do you realize the blessing of God upon you as a congregation? To have a man like Pastor Brian who knows the scriptures, who can preach the scriptures to you? Do you realize that generation to come, as our sons and daughters sit, they listen? Who knows what God may do when He is gone, when the elders are gone, when you are gone, another generation shall arise to call God blessed? Brethren, there are many people who would envy you. Take it very, very seriously. Appreciate it. Love it. Thank God for it. We pray for him regularly, for the elders regularly, for the deacons regularly, and for the church regularly. Brethren, what you have here is absolutely precious. Please, I beg you, do not take your men for granted, your church for granted, your brothers and sisters for granted, and all the teaching you are receiving. Please, please do not take it for granted. There are many people who are hungry and thirsty. They would love a crumb of what you are getting. And I mean that. So this is my word of exhortation to you. Appreciate it. Love it. Pray for your elders. Pray for your deacon. Pray for your members. Pray for the families. Pray that this place may soon become too small. Yes. And that God would give you more preaching, teaching elders who can preach. And out and from among you, God would raise preachers. Young men, many of you are young. God will raise preachers, raise young men to preach the gospel of the grace of God. What we want are young biblical men. There are many men back home. They do not know their Bibles. They cannot preach the Bible. But that man would grow. And in God's mercy, he would give you an academy where these men can be trained to be your elders, your preachers, and to send them out to preach the gospel of the grace of God. There are many congregations, many areas are starving. But it must begin with you. The Lord says, ask and you will receive. Two, you do not have because you do not ask. Ask God. Be faithful with your presence, with your prayers, with your money, with your attendance, as the men are giving themselves to lead you. It's a real blessing to be in a church where you have a body of elders to lead the sheep of God. Brethren, thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for your patience. I think it is time that I close up and shut up.
We hope you've enjoyed this message from Grace Community Church in Minden, Nevada. To receive a copy of this or other messages, call us at area code 775-782-6516 or visit our website, gracenevada.com.